A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why does making friends as an adult feel so
what
hard?
What should I wear on a first date?
What the
date?
Hell is a formal
but that why is buying not first good. Home
what
so
do I want my life to look like in 5 years?
We want to know too.
Since 2012, the Every Girl has been an online destination to help women around the world achieve the life of their dreams. Now, we're excited to bring you the same inspiring content with the Every Girl podcast.
Get my voice warmed. I was watching a Broadway person's morning routine, of course, on TikTok last night.
I always forget about your Broadway side.
I don't make it really obvious.
No, you don't.
My passion for Broadway is such a secret surprise when you get to know me.
It's a treat.
Because I'm not a theater girl. Like, I wasn't in theater. I just have a passion for Broadway musicals.
I love that.
Thank you. So I was watching her TikTok and she has a vocal steamer. And I was like, am I legit enough? That's what I need now is a vocal steamer. It might be added to cart on Amazon.
I wouldn't blame you.
I have my humidifier going.
The humidifier is already a lot. The humidifier is already like what's floating around Josie's head on this 30-person meeting.
Yep. Some people thought it was weed. And
it was not.
It was just humidifier. Anyway. Welcome back to the Every Girl podcast. I'm here with our podcast assistant, Emma.
Welcome back to the show.
Emma, what is this week's Ask the Every Girl?
This week's Ask the Every Girl is, my sister has been dating this guy for 5 months and we just found out they're getting engaged. I like him, but this is too soon, right? Do I say something or pretend to be happy for her?
This is giving Bachelor hometowns. Every single season for all of The Bachelor, when they do these hometowns, the family, basically all they talk about is, are you or are you not going to hurt our family member?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there's a lot they're not showing us, but we as the audience don't get to see. They're not asking, what do you like to do? What's your hobbies? Like the things that are normal, it's just, are you or are you not going to hurt our child, our sibling? And I already talked about this, that I loved Kelsey's daddy, Zaddy. How he responded, because it was the most healthy response. You know, she's making this decision on her own. It's not mine to give blessing or not blessing. It's not my choice to do this or not do this. It's hers. And if she's deciding this, I'm going to support her. So to share my thoughts, I completely understand wanting to protect your sister from heartbreak. You see this perfect, wonderful, beautiful little duckling that you have grown up with and that you love, and you want to protect her as much as you possibly can. But I hate to say it, it is not your journey.
This question is giving hardcore eldest sister stress. And like, girl, you deserve to relieve yourself of that.
Be on your own journey.
Yeah.
It's also like the worst thing that happens is this relationship, marriage, engagement doesn't work out and she gets her heart broken. That is the worst thing that could happen. She will not die. It's not like she's jumping off a cliff without proper equipment and you need to step in and save her from danger. Best case scenario, it's the love of her life. She has a long, happy marriage. We hope for that for her. You go, girl. But there's also the possibility always that it does not work out. But that would be so amazing for her because she gets the gift of learning from it and growing from it. We all have these things where we're like, ugh, that relationship that I was in or that job that I took or that move that I did. We all have these things that we look back and be like, ugh, that's a regret. But I think that if we look at them, we actually wouldn't change it because it's that cheesy thing of they made us who we are. So even if that happens, I don't think your sister will look back and say, I wish I could have changed history. Because it made her who she is.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to let her live her life because whether it works out or it doesn't, it's so critical and important for her life, for her growth, for her journey to make her own decisions.
I agree.
And nothing is going to change her mind that you say. So I think it's actually a question of like almost relieving yourself of the stress instead of trying to control what she's doing.
Even if you were to say, hey, I think it's too soon, what is she going to do? Decide not to marry the person she wants to marry in the timeline she wants to do it because you said something? Like, most often, if we were to say something to them, they wouldn't respond to me like, wow, great advice. I'm going to
take true.
It and not get married, right? They're not going to be like, yeah, you're totally right. Because if they do think we're right, they would have seen it for themselves. But also, you don't need to change it. If she gets hurt, that is an amazing lesson in life to have. That's an amazing experience. She's not going to die. She's going to survive. And I know you're going to be a great sister and be there for her either way, through happy things, through bad things. And it's an important part of her life. Be there with her to support her on her journey. But it's not up to you to protect her from going down certain roads.
I have one friend who, love her to death, but she's always giving advice like approximately 6 to 10 months before you're ready to hear it. And I think that can be challenging for her, honestly, because people have a really bad reaction to that sometimes. And so I think it's also a matter of like protecting yourself from the potential misunderstanding as well.
That's so true. Protecting yourself, protecting your relationship with her. It's one thing if they're coming to you and saying, I'm debating if this is too soon or not. What do you think?
Yeah.
Totally fine to give a very kind opinion. But if it's unsolicited advice, like this friend who's giving advice months in advance from when you actually want to hear it, to me, I'm like that it just never does any good, especially because everybody has different experience. What I know to be true may not be what's true for you. So me giving advice all the time is A, probably not effective because you're not always going to listen, but also because I don't know everything. Even like freaking Oprah doesn't know everything. The wisest person in the world still doesn't know what's best for you. So I think that the best thing we can be as supporters to our loved ones is to ask them and help them know what's right for them. And if they're telling you, this is the right thing for me, trust them.
You always say this about wellness, but I think it really goes for relationships and friendships. You know yourself the best.
Yes.
You are the expert of yourself.
Yes. And our job is just to help the people that we love feel like they're the experts of their life. Not that we are the expert of their life or they need approval. I feel like that's the best thing as a sibling, as a parent, whatever that we could give. Mm-hmm. Is making the people we love feel like they are the owners of their life, not us.
Yeah, absolutely. I just relate to this listener quite a bit because I totally get the eldest sibling concern and like wanting to really step in or control what my siblings are doing or tell them to go on a certain path. And I have to constantly remind myself that it's not serving me or them. But it's a tough reminder.
It's hard.
Like you said, I love asking, especially my brother, I love asking him more questions about his life to be like, how can we get to the decision rather than me making it for you?
Yes. I think questions are the way to go. Questions and listening, like don't make them feel like you're
interrogating
them. It's just like, I want to listen to you. You tell me what you think. Since you're the oldest sister with your little siblings, if they came to you one day and were like, I am getting engaged. I've been seeing this person for 5 months. Would that feel too soon for you? Because this also begs the question, is there a right amount of time before getting engaged where it's no longer concerning? What would you feel if they came to you with a 5-month relationship?
5 months is soon. So I do think that's quick, but I don't think it's wrong. Like there's nothing wrong with being fast. What do you think? You've been in a relationship for a long time. What are your thoughts here?
I love your emphasis on long time. Way too long.
No, not too long. Just much longer than I have ever been in a relationship. So I'd love to hear from you.
You know, I don't know if I have any blanket advice that I would give on this, because I know of many couples, like you hear about those couples that they got engaged after 3 weeks and they've been together for 40 years and
yeah.
they're way happier than the couple who was together for 10 years and then ended up getting divorced. You know, I don't yeah. know how much timing really plays into making a relationship success. What I will say, what I feel for me, I have liked being with my boyfriend for 7 years. I know that we had the privilege of meeting when we were young, and so we had more time together just to date. But I feel like it is helpful to give time to settle into a place where the newness can wear off and you can just exist around each other. And it's not mm-hmm. this rose-colored glasses, everything they say I love. I'm like trying to impress them. You almost kind of like got to give it a chance that you get the ick, like you kind of want to test out, will I get the ick or won't I? And so if you've been together for 7 years and you've seen the things that I've seen and you still want to make out with this person, that's a good sign. But I think when you're in the beginning stages of a relationship, it's hard to know if you're going to get the ick. It just is. Like mm-hmm. the ick might appear when all the newness has worn off and you're going to the grocery store and they're annoying the shit out of you. You want to know if
yeah.
it could be there. For me, I've liked getting to know someone like so well before mm-hmm. I make a commitment. But I don't think that there was like one right way to do things. I also don't know. You hear people that were together for a very short period of time and they say the whole when you know thing. I don't know if I believe that. What are your thoughts on when you know?
I also do not believe that. I think
okay, tell me why.
I think it's really possible to have very strong feelings for someone and to be like, this probably won't work out. There are so many romances and relationships you could have in your life where you're like, this probably is not the person, but I still need this love in my life anyways. Versus if you think maybe this is the person, that's something I feel has to develop over time.
I agree with that, because there's also been many instances, I'm sure everyone listening can probably think of a few for yourselves, where you really love someone and you want to make it work. And that idea of when you know is so hard to define. What the hell does that? What does that really even mean? What does knowing mean? So for a lot of people, they can interpret that as knowing must mean I really love this person and I want it to work. That must be the knowing that everyone talks about.
Right.
So then because you love them, because you want it to work, you believe that's the knowing. So then you're like, great, this is the person. But I think we've all been in instances where we love someone and wanted it to work, but they were not the person. So that's why I feel like that saying is really confusing, because it's so hard to define. Because
yeah.
most people enter relationships, enter marriages thinking, I know this is the person I want to be with. That doesn't mean that that's the truth forever, but you can still know right now and have that change in the future. I do feel like there's maybe an intuition, like I've been in other relationships before, and Joey was the first person that like, as soon as I met him, I had this intuitive feeling that I'm like, I know, maybe this is the no, I know. But it was like I had this intuition of like, I don't want anything else. This is more than just a fun relationship. This is more than just someone I'm going to date. Like an intuitive feeling. I think that there's some amount of, I feel like this person is going to be something really special, but maybe it's not the same, like when you know thing. If
right,
that makes sense.
If the knowing itself is not specifically tied to engagement or marriage. Like I know this person is going to be in my life, but the knowing doesn't have to be. I know how our futures are going to turn out. In terms of timelines, there are a lot of other, honestly, much more boring factors than we would probably care to admit that contribute to knowing that it's the right time to get engaged to someone. We want it to be the magic. And like to some degree, of course it is. But also, you could just be at the right time in your life. Maybe you're like looking to take your relationship to that next level because you feel like you've reached a certain point in your career. Or you both want the same things, and that's boring, but it's also yeah. helpful.
Maybe you're like me, and like if it were just the commitment thing,
exactly.
it would have happened years ago. But I felt like I want to have all this life on my own. So while I'm in a relationship with him, I want to feel like I have made this move. I've had an apartment. I've built this life alongside him, but not conjoined, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I want to live life for me for a while. So to your point, like there are so many other factors besides, oh, I know they're the one, so I'm going to get married right now. It doesn't have to happen like that. But also, it could happen that you meet someone and you feel like my intuition is telling me I want to get married. Like I always say, the worst thing that happens, whether you've been with someone for a month or 10 years and you get married, is that you have to get divorced. And it's really painful. I'm not trying to minimize divorce or breakups. Like it is so painful. But oh my God, will it make you better? Will it make you grow? Will it make you know what you want? Will it make you know yourself more? And that's a blessing. So whether any relationship works out or it doesn't, to me, I'm like, the only regret would be not loving as hard as you can.
100%. I agree with that.
Speaking of finding the one, which I hate the terminology, but we're using it, so I'm going to say it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of dating, relationships, I know that you just wrote this article about the 51st dates and you're on your own kind of dating journey.
This girl, Liberty Schultz on TikTok, go find her. I interviewed her for this article because she's going on 51st dates. And I just love how she's restoring her followers' faith in dating. Because here's the thing about me is I am just obnoxiously pro-dating.
Wait, what's like anti-dating? Like, why wouldn't you be pro-dating?
Well, the thing is, I personally know that I'm in a point in my life when I'm not ready for a relationship, but I was just in my shell for so long dating-wise that I'm like, never again. Never again am I going to become desensitized to the feeling of wanting to connect with other people. So for that reason, I will sometimes just go on dates because I feel like it's important to go on dates. I think it's part of a healthy reminder and check-in with yourself about where you're at in terms of relationships with other people. And so I love that Liberty is using this 51st dates framework to get her followers excited about dating again and show that there are really cool people out there. She told me she's using a Google form that she has her friends send to people that they think would be good for her to go on a first date with, which I think is so genius.
We love the thoroughness.
I will make a Google form for myself.
Okay, we need updates with the Google form.
So that's the article. Go read the full article on volume dating.
What's the title?
The title is This Every Girl is Going on 51st Dates to Find Her Person. Go learn about why you might want to go on 51st dates yourself.
I had never heard the term volume dating before reading this article, and it's fascinating. I love that, though, because I think so many people date for the point of finding a relationship. It's fine, but that is so draining because then every single date that does not turn into a relationship is a, quote, failure. It can feel like I've been failing at all these dates rather than looking at what it is, which is how great I've gotten to connect with people. The more I go on, the more chance I'll have to connect with people that like genuinely are a good fit for me. I love that it's changing the purpose of dating. It can just be fun. It can just be good to connect with human beings. I get to learn so much about myself. I get to have fun. Maybe get a free drink or two. And that should be fun.
Yeah. Especially if let's say I get to like date three and I don't feel like I'm connecting with the person, that's a sign for me that maybe not even necessarily that we wouldn't have clicked, but it's a sign for me about me. It's an indication to me that I'm not ready to be dating to find my person or a long-term relationship.
Okay, question for you. Maybe this is like an outdated thing since I have not been in the dating pool for a while. So this is like a temperature check.
Mm-hmm.
If it were reverse, if it were, let's say, a man says, I've gone on three dates and it's not about you. I just decided that I'm not ready to have a relationship. Would we call him an asshole because he went on three dates? Okay.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if it was like 8+ range of dates, then have a discussion about exclusivity /DTR at least, or talk about what you want out of this. But I think even like around the 4-5 date range, if someone was like, I'm not ready for this, I would be like, great, thank you for saving me from your breakdown that you would have had in 3 months. I don't think that that's an asshole move, in my opinion. If you're a few dates in and you're like, I'm not ready for this, I think you're doing the other person a favor. It's more about the how than anything else.
The huge piece of it is you're not going on dates, love bombing, and then taking away the romance. You're just having fun. Like you're going on dates to get to know people rather than giving them any false hope or promise. You're making me open my mind because I'm someone who's so quick to be like, men are fuckboys. And I think it's probably the stereotype. Historically, what it was a stereotype of women always want a relationship. So women are invested and men don't want a relationship. So they're removed. And it's like they're the asshole then because women are wanting a relationship from them and they're giving them that false hope, if that makes sense. When my friends go on dates and a guy is like, I'm not ready for a relationship, and they've been seeing each other for a little bit, it's like, that guy's such an asshole. He's such a fuck boy. But you're opening my mind. Maybe there is that double standard there of like, we should all just be free to enjoy the dating process and pursue whatever we want and not assume either way that people either want a relationship or that people don't want a relationship and allow ourselves and focus on what we want.
Yeah. I think all dating, dare I say, including marriage, is a self-discovery process.
I could not agree more. I feel like the best relationships, the most fulfilling relationships, are the ones that expose you to yourself, the ones that like help you grow, not because they're degrading you and making you change, but because you have the safety of a safe relationship to feel like, whoa, I can notice my triggers. I can get to know myself. I can see what I don't like, what I like, and I can flourish in that way and grow in who I am.
It's a way to learn about yourself and the world. It's not just all about that other person. We went on a tangent, but
we did go on a tangent. I want to know what other people think. Is there a right timeline? So DM us at the Evergirl Podcast on Instagram. Leave us a review because I want to hear what you guys think. Is there a right timeline to dating? Is there such a thing as when you know, you know? Like, tell us the tea.
Yeah.
Let's get into today's episode. Brandi Sellers Jackson is the inspiring author of On Thriving, Harnessing Joy Through Life's Great Labors. She's been featured in media outlets such as Oprah Daily and The Today Show. This episode is so empowering. We discuss all the details to actually thrive in your life and how to start living a more joyous life today instead of waiting until you get that promotion, you get that relationship, you lose weight, or you feel less stressed. You deserve to thrive right now. And this episode is going to show you how to get there. From why self-care is like a houseplant to why you should stop calling people resilient or strong, Brandi has so many great nuggets of wisdom that you will want to apply to your life. Please welcome Brandi Sellers Jackson to the Every Girl Podcast. Welcome to the Every Girl Podcast.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I want to start by giving our audience a little bit of context. Going way back to your childhood, would a young Brandi be surprised by what you're doing now?
That's a really good question. In some aspects, sure. But in many, perhaps no. Young Brandi would be surprised that I live all the way across the country from where I grew up. I grew up in the South, so I'm on the opposite coast. I think she would be surprised by the twists and turns life has taken, and yet we're happy. We're so very happy. I think she would be surprised by that. I think she would be surprised by how happy we are. And I say we because I always carry her with me, little girl brain. I don't think she would be surprised by me writing a book. I wrote my first book when I was 8, and it wasn't as, in some ways, I guess it was as intense as the book that I have out now, but it was called The Little Pup, and it was riveting. It was suspense, okay?
Wow.
A lot of plot twists. It involved a puppy whose name was Chippy, who lived in a shelter with other dogs, and apparently no one wanted to play with Chippy.
No,
and
basically, poor Chippy.
Poor Chippy. Long story short, the shelter ends up burning down And mysteriously, see, I told you, plot twist. Plot twist, Chippy rescues all the dogs. And then afterward, everyone wants to play with him.
Wow.
Right. I know.
So I feel like the movie rights for Chippy should be kind of your next project.
Absolutely. My oldest son is a Scorpio. And he was like, okay, so let me get this right. So the shelter just mysteriously caught on fire. He's like, are you sure Chippy didn't set the fire? I was like, okay, give it to a Scorpio. So, yeah. So,
oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Little girl Brandy would be surprised in many ways. Probably not.
It sounds like there's a lot of character dynamics under Chippy that we can really explore.
Absolutely. I mean, there's one part it said Chippy wasn't alone because he had a friend and that friend was himself. And I was like, okay. Okay, Brandy.
Wow.
Indy, that's deep.
But it does make a lot of sense. That interest in awareness and self and thriving. It sounds like that was always a consistent string through your life.
Yeah. And I don't think it was because I wanted it to be. I had to learn really early in life.
In the introduction to your book, you explain yourself as a birth and postpartum doula that became a life doula, which I think is so interesting to explain it in this way. So you write, I want to quote to you because I love what you wrote here. You write, we are all giving birth to something, conceiving a new reality, laboring through our days as we attempt to capture our joy and hold it close. I love this part, even though this was just the introduction, but I love this explanation of what you do as a life doula, because I think it's so true. Every life transition means the death of the old self or old life and the birth of something new, but also every single day, I feel like we are reborn again and again. How did you get into this doula work?
I started as a birth and postpartum doula. That was the first gig. And I really enjoyed it. It's nothing better than seeing someone give birth.
Mm.
To be able to hold space for them in that way during one of the most difficult moments of their life. However, things kind of started to shift the more work that I began to do. Especially in 2020. I think a lot of us were doing a lot of work in 2020. And the more work that I did, the more I started paying attention to how things made me feel. The thing about being a birth doula is that you can't control when babies are born. They could be born in the morning, they could be born at night, in the middle of the night. So at any given moment, I would have to get up, grab my things, and rush, get in the car. And I didn't really like that feeling. And I thought, but who does like that? Nobody, right? I don't like being on call. And I thought, well, nobody likes being on call. But the more that I began to dig, the more I realized, no, this is different though. This is more than the inconvenience. The more I began to dig, the more I realized that that feeling felt a lot like the feeling of being jolted awake in the middle of the night as a child and having to keep someone safe. And the more I began to really think about that, it made it very clear. This feeling is very familiar to me. And also is why I got into this work, because I'm good at it. I'm good at being a doula. I've been a doula since I can remember. I've been protecting people and keeping people safe before I should have been keeping people safe. So the more that I began to dig, the more I realized that this isn't what I want to do. And it just so happened that at that same time during the pandemic, there wasn't a lot of space for doulas to go into hospitals because of COVID. And I started having to doula people over the phone and virtually as someone's giving birth, doulaing them over the phone. But then I started getting these weird phone calls where it would be from a client or a former client saying, hey, so I have this friend who is going through X, Y, and Z. And they just want to talk. And they're just trying to figure out how to navigate their in-laws. Or they're just having to navigate this new baby. And not breastfeeding, but who they are as a person now that they've given birth. It started shifting into that. And it just made me think of this conversation that I had with a dear friend of mine. Her name is Aisha Tasati. She is an amazing healer. But we were talking one Saturday and we were like, man, wouldn't it be good if someone could just like life doula you? If they could just like doula you through life. So that's where it came from.
Isn't it amazing how life is happening to us, but yet we are such an active participant, but it's kind of like the right thing at the right time that you need always comes to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But how did you get this concept for realizing, wow, I need to help people thrive, that then became your book on thriving?
I thought about what I needed. And I think that that's always a great place to start. What is it that you needed during those tough times, during those moments? Because I believe that the things that we go through, they're not really just for us. They're for others that are coming behind us or alongside of us. And so what is it that I needed during that time? What would I say to myself during that time? And it was kind of birthed from that, me wanting to give myself that very thing. And then knowing that I'm not alone. There's someone else who has lost a mother. There's someone else who's figuring out jobs. There's someone else who's figuring out grief. There's someone who's figuring out their relationship. Basic human things that we're always trying to figure out.
Which I feel like is when the best books, the best businesses, the best everything happens, is when you're filling the void that you have felt.
Absolutely.
I want to get into the content of your book a little bit because I know our listeners will absolutely love it. The title itself, like I even just want to start there. The use of the word thriving is so powerful, but I do feel like that word gets thrown around often. What does it mean to you?
Thriving means the opposite of surviving, which I think a lot of us do. A lot of us survive and we just go with the flow. We get through it. We power through. And in my opinion, that's not living. So when I think of thriving, I think of living. I think of plants who are thriving. They are getting whatever they need to get to live and not just survive the day, but like really live and experience it and savor it. I think of savoring every bite of this life, not just powering through it, savoring all of the moments of it, not just the tasty ones, but the ones that even are kind of like bitter. Because I think that's also part of our experience.
Absolutely. I think that's such an important message because I certainly have been in the place, I know a lot of people are, where they think, oh yeah, once I get this promotion or make this money or get in a relationship, then I'll be happy. Or they're going through something like you talk about in the book, whether it's grief, loss, heartbreak, rejection, and they're thinking, all I need to do is get through this. I can't thrive in my life right now. I'm dealing with all this. I'm so stressed out. So I feel like it's almost sadly second nature for us to think I will thrive when rather than thinking I'm thriving now.
Yes.
No matter what, you should be thriving because that's what living is.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing is too, if we're always waiting for it, if we're always waiting for joy and thriving, if we're always waiting on that, we're continually in longing. And that also is not life. So I try to paint the picture that we can thrive right now, even in the hard parts.
Can you give some examples of the difference between surviving and thriving?
Surviving looks like you're going through your day. That's how many of us are. For parents, we take the kids to school. We drop them off. We go to work. We cook dinner. We do all the things, right? The list of things. And then we go to bed and we repeat. And during that time, there are things that hit us. It can be little things. You know, that person cuts you off in traffic. Your boss says something weird that just is just really grating at you. Family members, you got to deal with them. The dog just pooped on the floor again. All those things, right? And you power through them. You're surviving. You're surviving. You're surviving. Survival tools look like how we deal with those things. So it looks like avoidance. If you're grieving, I'm not going to feel that. It looks like self-sabotage. So when you get the opportunity for more, you bypass it because you're like, oh, I'm not worthy of it. That's survival because you don't want to be let down. Those are survival tools. Those are things that we do to just survive. And they look different for everyone. In my early childhood, my survival tool was hiding the knives. I grew up in a very abusive home. My biological father was really abusive. My mother was a victim of his abuse. And to keep everyone safe, I would hide the knives as a child. I would hide them under the bed. And of course, as you get older, that survival just matures. So yes, I'm not hiding knives, but I'm finding other ways to keep everyone around me safe. I become a doula. Survival tools. Okay, everyone's good. Okay, everyone's good. Everyone's good. And internally, I feel chaotic, but my survival tool is to keep everyone safe, to keep everyone at peace. So I think it's one, determining what your survival tool looks like, that thing that you picked up to just survive. Thriving oftentimes is, it's a lot of unlearning. Thriving looks like, again, going about your day. The dog still poops on the floor. The person still cuts you off in traffic, but the way you respond to it looks different. So thriving looks like, instead of self-sabotage, feeling the feeling of, yeah, I want to completely say no before they say no to me, but you know what? I'm worthy of, yes, I'm worthy of this opportunity. Thriving looks like, I'm not going to hide the knives. Everyone is adults here. Everyone's going to be okay. I need to make sure I'm okay. Thriving looks like affirmations, telling yourself what you are worthy of. And you kind of have to determine what that looks like for you. Oftentimes it's the opposite. I found that if I just do the opposite of what I know to do, you could also find your thriving tool that way. So like, if my initial gut reaction is to run and hide, maybe my thriving tool is to confront it and not avoid it and just sit in it.
Because that is immediately switching you out of survival mode, because it's training you to be like, no, there's a different way to do it. I don't need to be in survival mode.
Exactly. Exactly. I feel like that's usually sometimes the best place to start, doing the thing that you normally wouldn't do. Just do the opposite. What you would do, now do the opposite. Because if we're being honest, if you think about, how does that thing make me feel? How does that survival tool make me feel? Yes, I'm used to it. I'm used to responding this way. I'm used to reacting this way. I'm used to going about my day this way, but how do I really like it? And if you don't, do the opposite. And it's going to feel weird at first. It's going to feel like, wait, what? But just because it feels weird doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that it's not familiar.
I really love the definition of it, because when you first think of thriving, at least my experience was, I was like, oh, thriving means you're like super joyful and happy and living your best life. Thriving is actually not about being super, super happy. It's just doing the opposite of what your survival mode is and getting out of that. Because that's a great example of how we can thrive even through grief, and how we can thrive even when we're stressed, because it's just changing our brain out of survival mode.
Exactly. Because that's the other thing, too. Those things are going to happen. We're going to all, you know, and I talk about this, the four labors, you know, and one of them is grief. We're going to all find ourselves in those seats, in that room. And so what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to just sit there and not feel. We're going to sit there and not thrive. We're just going to survive it. It doesn't feel good. How about we just figure out a way how we can sit in this? Because we're going to be here either way and thrive in it until we're not in it anymore. Because we're going to get out of it eventually.
What are some of those common survival tools or survival modes that you see people go into, especially in times of rejection, grief, heartbreak, stress?
For grief, avoidance. We don't want to feel it. No one wants to feel it. So I've seen people substitute. So they'll spend their days keeping busy as opposed to sitting in the quiet and feeling it, because the quiet's going to be sitting there waiting on you to come back. You can either sit in it now or sit in it later, but it's going to stay there until you deal with it. As far as stress, I've seen people, their survival mode is either isolation. That's a big one. A lot of people feel as if they withdraw when they're stressed. Some people blow up. Some people withdraw. I've found that people who withdraw during stressful moments, who try to take it on all by themselves, they probably were told as little children to just get over it and to deal with it and to power through. And they weren't really given space to share their emotions. So because of that, now as adults, when there are stressful moments, because there was never space given to them for those stressful moments, they just kind of suck them all in. And so isolation is a big one. They don't want to feel like a weight or a bother or a burden. So they just take it on themselves, which to some may sound super independent. No, it's unhealthy, because we're actually meant to lean into community.
Would the thriving tool for that one be then to consciously seek out help and dependence on other people?
Yep. Yeah. When people ask you, do you need anything? Even if all you can say is yes, and you don't know what they can do, just say yes. What others see about us, we may not see. So even if we say, yes, I need help, they can take it from there.
I know that you had mentioned grief being one of those four great labors of our lives that you talk about in the book. Can you share what the others are and then walk us through how you overcame each one?
The first one that I talk about is relationships, relationship with self and others. We start off with the relationship with self. The second one is mental health, because we're all navigating that, especially after the past 4 years, and then have that on top of the trauma that we've had before that. Then we have grief, which no one gets an exemption from experiencing grief. And then lastly, being othered. All of us are going to sit in that room. We look around, you're the only woman, you're the only person of color, you're the only gay person, you're the only trans person, you're the only disabled person, you're the only married person, you're the only elderly person. The list goes on. There will be a time where you are the only in that moment. And how do you thrive in those moments? Do you shrink? Do you disappear and do the Homer Simpson into the bushes? What do you do? For me, in my relationships with myself, that was one of the biggest keys to unlock right there, because it's probably one of the hardest relationships you'll ever have. You got to figure out yourself. There's a whole bunch of people around us, but how we look at ourselves, how we love upon ourselves is the capacity by which we can love up on anyone else. Mental health. I've had trauma as a child, as many people have had trauma. And figuring out how do I thrive and heal it has been probably one of the biggest works I've had to do. And not just for myself, but for my children, for my grandchildren. I think of my mother, I think of my grandmother, and they're amazing women. But if they would have had half the resources that I have, thriving with my grief, for goodness sake, I mean, I lost my mother 2 weeks before I turned 30. And it was one of the toughest things ever. And tough is an understatement. If I could go back in time, I would have told myself, just sit with it. Sit with it. This is hard, but you're going to be okay. And so how do we thrive while grieving what was? And I really tried to make sure that I wrote not just about death as just an example of grief, but even the things that we go through on a day-to-day basis that we have to grieve. You know, the grief of an old chapter, the grief of a relationship, the grief of all those things that we've lost along the way, and how it's not necessarily the end, but it's also the beginning of something. That's grief. And then lastly, othered. I am a Black woman, and it's been a wild ride in this skin. As a woman, as a Black woman, as a mother, I know that if there was something that I would have told myself, and I tell myself continually even now, because it's every day, it's an everyday journey, is that you deserve to be here. You deserve to be in this room. You deserve to be in this space. You deserve to take up space.
I love so much that you call these labors. It's very clever play on words. Like, it's a work to go through these things. But then just like with childbirth and that form of labor, it's this pain, but then there's a rebirth. There is a birth of something else. Reading the book really made me relook at things. I've been dealing with a lot of grief myself this year, and it made me see it as, rather than just like this painful process that I have to do, I saw it as a rebirth. But it's like experiencing all of these things through the lens of it's a labor, which means it's painful and hard, but there is birth at the end.
Yeah, that's so good. That's exactly it. And I love what you said, even just about the birth at the end. That is the goal. Anyone who's seen a birth will tell you it's arduous and it's hard. You feel like you're not going to make it. But at the end of it, it's this beautiful thing that you birthed. And I think that life is no different. These things that, these hard moments that we go through, on the other side of it is this new beginning.
Going back to that first labor, that relationship with yourself, I feel like that's one that it almost gets put on the back burner. We go through grief and loss and mental health. And thank God we have a lot more resources and we're talking about these things more and more. And there's therapy and important tools that now in our modern world we're discussing more and encouraging more. But that relationship with self, it's kind of like the fluffy recite affirmations in the mirror, but the real work on the relationship, what you're talking about with the pain, the labor of relationship with self, it's not something we talk about often. One of my favorite quotes from you is that self-care is like a house plant. So I want to talk more about this. Can you explain this one? Why is self-care like a house plant?
Because you have to be aware of it. Anyone who's had a house plant knows that plants are so fickle. One day you are like, oh my gosh, I did that, sis. Did you see this? It was dead. Now it's alive. Woo-hoo, yay me. And then the next day, it is like crumbled to the floor. All its leaves are like brown. I have failed. And I think self-care is the same way. You have to be aware of it. You know, you look at a plant, it needs water, water it. You look at a plant, it needs pruning. Please prune it. Oh my gosh, there's brown spots. I need to cut those off. It's going to drain literally all the nutrients from the soil if I don't cut it off. So it's no different. We are the same way. We have to be aware of our environment. We have to be aware of our surroundings. We have to be aware of how much water we're taking in, what season we're in. Are we in a season of planting seeds or harvesting? Otherwise, we think that we're doing it wrong. There's a lot of cues that we can take from nature in that way.
That's such a good analogy, and being consistently aware of it. You know, you can't water your plant one time a week and be like, oh, it's taken care of, I'm good. You might be underwatering it, or other plants need less.
Yeah.
You could be a cactus. Yeah. So it's constantly being aware of what does the plant need. They think self-care, people so often think of it as like the checklist. They think of face mask, bubble bath, affirmations, journal. And it's not. It's the consistent checking in with where are the brown spots? Do you need watering? Have you had too much water? Where do I need to cut around? Where do I need to plant? This is probably the best way I've ever heard self-care be described, because it feels so true to what it is. And it counteracts all the misconceptions out there that we see about self-care.
Yeah. I wanted people to realize that you actually have everything you need to do self-care, because in our world, self-care has now been, you got to get this crystal.
Totally.
You
got to
get this book. You got to get this candle. You got to get this bath salt. It is always these things that are outside of us. They're all outside of us. And that, to me, makes self-care, it's not as accessible. But imagine if we know that actually everything we need to take care, we have it. It's literally found in our yes or our no. It's found in us going and laying down. It's found in us creating boundaries around things that actually doesn't work for me. If we really knew that, one, we would be a whole lot richer. Two, wouldn't be so daunting. We want the candle, we want the bath salt, but we don't need it. You don't need it to self-care.
And that might be treating self, but that's not caring for self.
Exactly.
Moving into that second labor, resilience. I love the way you talk about resilience. So to share with our listeners, what you write about resilience is that you cringe at the thought of using that word. Can you explain why?
I think people overuse it, for one. And they usually place it on the backs of people that have had to be for a very long time. i.e. Black women. Oh my gosh, you're so strong. Oh my God, you're so resilient. I'm so over that. Do not call me strong. I do not want to be called strong. I want to be in my soft era. Okay. I want to be in my delicate flower bubble bath. I just want to be carried. I want to be in that era. I think it's placed on a lot of us because we've had to be, and I don't like it. And also when we put it on the backs of those who've had to carry it, it denies us of our humanity, where we can't be anything but that. Who's only one thing? However, I tried my best to use a great example of what I believe resilience is. I believe it's more than just how much can you take without dying, and more so your will to get up and to straighten your back. I use the example of flowers, how flowers are resilient. If you step on a flower, they literally have this amazing ability to realign themselves and straighten their backs because they know that there's no pollination and it affects the community. I think of it that way more so. I am straightening my back. I'm possessing the will to be resilient, not necessarily this burden that's placed upon me.
It's like realizing the strength that each of us have within us to get through things, to move on, to move past things, rather than using this word of resilience or strength as a compliment and as a personality trait.
Exactly. Exactly. Because no one wants that. We want space for all of our humanity. We want space to, yes, be strong and be resilient and be the boss and all that. But we also want space to rest and to be free in that way.
Also redefining the way our culture sees these words, because like you said, when we talk about strength or resilience, it's typically like, wow, you're so strong. You went through this really hard thing. But you know what else is strong? Choosing to ask for help, right? That's strong.
That is so strong.
Feeling like you're having a mental breakdown and so you're going to a therapist because you can't go through something alone. That is strong. I think about this a lot with the word brave. You see kids, if they're at the roller coaster and everyone's like, come on, be brave and go on the roller coaster you're scared of. And I always think maybe it would be braver for the kid to choose, I'm not going to do what other people are telling me to. I'm going to choose not to go on the roller coaster. And that's the brave option. So it's redefining the way our culture views these words.
Yes, what it means to you. And yeah, totally. I love that. Love that.
Because I've dealt with years of chronic constipation, indigestion, and painful bloat after literally every meal, I have truly mastered my gut health protocol. I chew my food slowly, get into rest and digest before eating, and take Hum's Flatter Me Digestive Enzyme supplement before meals. You probably already know of Hum Nutrition. They're a leading vitamin brand on the forefront of wellness, and their digestive enzyme, Flatter Me, has garnered a cult following after going viral on TikTok for its benefits. Flatter Me is clinically tested to de-bloat fast and works after only one use. Seriously, you guys, it is the ultimate de-bloating hack. I like it for everyday use. It's filled with clean and natural ingredients that are overall good for the gut. But before I eat pizza or pasta or any foods that typically have made me bloated, it's a game changer. Like, I can actually go out to dinner, order a cacio e pepe with extra lemon, and not get uncomfortably bloated because I took a Flatter Me digestive enzyme before eating. To try it for yourself, we got you an amazing deal. Head to humnutrition.com, that is humnutrition.com, and get 40% off your first order of $39 or more with code EveryGirl40. Go grab your Flatter Me digestive enzymes today as this offer expires soon. That is humnutrition.com and use code EveryGirl40 for 40% off your first order of $39 or more. Happy digesting. Let's talk about starting to thrive. For listeners who have listened to this amazing conversation and been like, I absolutely hear you, Brandy. I'm in survival mode. I want to get into thriving. What are those tangible tips someone can start doing today to get them into a thriving state?
First, I would say, define what thriving looks like for you. What does it mean for you? You have to know what it looks like because it's going to look different for everyone. And it may differ from day to day. Today, thriving looked like getting my kids out of the house on time and making sure they all have socks on. That was thriving today. A few months ago, it was finishing up a chapter for the day, you know? So define what that thriving looks like for you. I also say, know that you are worthy of thriving. Know that you're worthy of it. I think that's half the battle. I think many of us, especially if you experience trauma, it's really hard to break out of the idea that you are worthy of good happening. You have to kind of restructure your thinking. Who else is more of a worthy candidate than me because of what I've experienced? So defining it, knowing that you're worthy of it, and then also community. Community is a big, big, big deal. It's so important. I talk about the different people that you need in your community, those people that can help you walk through life. And really, you only need one. You need one good friend, someone who you can confide in. I think that's important for thriving. I don't think we're supposed to just be out in the ocean by ourselves.
What about taking it a step further and now cultivating joy? Can you share some tips for how someone can cultivate joy?
Ooh, joy is really simple. And I think it depends on the person, obviously. I find joy in some of the weirdest things sometimes. I find joy when my child is brutally honest. He told my husband the other day, Dad, and he's 8. He said, Dad, I'm sorry. All I heard was blah, 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 blah. And that just brought me so much joy because it was like, that was really honest. Joy looks like kindness watching, going out and actively looking for kindness, like actively looking for it, spotting it. I write about how I was at a farmer's market. I live here in Pasadena and there's farmer's markets literally everywhere all the time, 24/7. But I saw this farmer who was at the farmer's market and he had these honey sticks and he gave these boys, they were walking by, some honey sticks. And I don't know why it made me feel some kind of way, but I think it really was just the kindness of it. It was the kindness of it that he just offered that to them. And it began to make me think too, like, how lucky am I that I live in a space where kids are offered honey sticks and they're not, you know, these are 3 Black boys. And so I was like, man, how great is it that we live in a community where they're offered honey sticks and they're not offered racism or they're not offered something that could do them harm. How lucky am I that I get to witness this? And so it just brought me so much joy. And then it made me want to be kind to someone else and do the same thing. I was like, do I have any honey sticks? It was contagious. I think the key to joy is to actively look for it. You have to look for it. You can't wait on it. Like, really look for it and then go kindness watching because it will bring you joy. It really will. Mm-hmm. It will bring you so much joy. Like, go and see if you can spot a random act of kindness between strangers. And you might look like a little, like a lurker. But it's it's fine. It's for a good cause. I'm a good person.
I'm like, you need a business card that's like, I'm not a lurker. I'm trying to be a good person.
I'm just watching you. Just carry on, carry on.
But I think, wow, what a powerful example. Yeah. What does it say about humanity that we are able to feel happy when we see someone else?
Yes.
Kindness. That's got to say a lot about human nature.
I mean, there's whole studies on kindness, how it literally can cause us to live longer. That's amazing. And I imagine the opposite is true, too. If you're not kind, welp, you know, I mean, you only got to tell me once. Mm-hmm. I'm sold at that. If you're kind, you might live to see some things. Okay, cool. I think that that says a lot, absolutely, about humanity, that we need that. We need to experience that. And then also, too, the opposite is true. Experiencing anger all the time, it's not good for us. So we need that. We need to fill our joy cup up.
It's like not only just mentally, but physically. Yes. Our bodies thrive in a state of empathy, compassion, and connection to other people.
Absolutely, it does.
Okay, Brandy, we're going to wrap up with some rapid fire questions. First one, you're a thriving icon. So any like celebrity, public figure that you look to and think like, wow, they're thriving.
Dinah Ross.
Oh,
I don't know her, but if I did, oh my God. I say her because she's a mother. And from what I've heard from interviews, she really knew what she wanted. And that was really important to her. She knew what she wanted and she knew what was the important thing to her. And that was her kids. Well, she loved to do, obviously, music. And somehow in there, she just seems like she's just thriving.
That's such a good one. I saw her show in Vegas a couple years ago. And
I did too, yeah.
Boy, is she thriving. She had like 9 outfit changes. She sings amazing. She has like such a great personality on stage. Like she is thriving.
Thriving. Completely thriving. Absolutely.
Your favorite movie of all time?
I have quite a few, depending on the season. If it's Christmas or the holidays, Elf. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Another one would be Coming to America. It's so many quotable moments. Those would be my two that I think are just amazing.
I love it. Very different vibes, different moods.
Yes.
Okay. Best advice you've ever received?
Remember who you are. Remember who you are. I remember this one woman, I was in my early 20s. She said, you're going to have many titles. You're going to be someone's wife, someone's mother, someone blah, 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 blah. But you're Brandy. Remember that. Don't get caught up in, I am just someone's mom or I'm just someone's wife. I am Brandy, like the core of who you are. Make sure you hold on to that.
Wow. That's great advice. A book that changed your life, obviously, besides your own.
On Thriving, definitely. She's the author. I mean, she's okay. She kind of knows what she's talking about. The Alchemist. Far, The Alchemist. It's one of those books I definitely visit quite a lot. Like I'll go skim through and it'll be years before I read it again. I'm probably due to read it again at some point.
Those are the best answers when it's the book that you go to at different times and they like mean a little bit different for you each time you read it.
Yeah, it's been a while for sure since I've read it, but I want to get back into it again.
And Brandy, where can everyone find you and get your book?
I'm online, obviously on Instagram, BeStereo, but you can get the book wherever books are sold. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, Books A Million, your independent bookstores. It's probably there. Yeah.
Brandy, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this conversation with you. It was so powerful, so wonderful getting to know you. Thank you for being in the space with me.
Of course, likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. I know I sure did. Please do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe. It really makes a huge difference for our show so we can keep growing and bringing the content that you love. If you want more info, you can find us at The Evergirl Podcast on Instagram or theevergirlpodcast.com. Talk to you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.